So I want you to help me out here at the beginning as I think about the work we are working on in class. It occurs to me that the bringing lost people to Jesus is a work that has a lot of pieces to it, or a lot of facets. Do you follow what I'm saying there? A lot of different kinds of things that need to be done to pull that off. And so what I'd like to do here at the beginning is ask you to work with me on this question. What all would that include? Rumor, is it working out?
All right. So I'm going to make a list and get you guys just to throw in with me on that. What kinds of things, anything, need to be done to help someone who is lost come to Jesus?
Know your audience.
That's on our end. I'm thinking about what we need to do for them.
Listen.
We need to listen. Okay? Listen to them. What else?
Invitation.
You have anything in mind when you say that?
Study.
Invite to study.
Service.
Well, see, that's why I asked the question. You might invite someone to come visit a service, okay?
Just a meal. Just to take a meal. Invite them to a meal just to get the relationship.
Okay. Can I broaden it out to that last thing you said? Because...
Yeah, broaden it out.
So, just know, I frequently hijack answers. Build relationships with people. Get to know them. Earl says feed them, which I would expect a guy from New Orleans to say. That's fitting somehow. What else?
Know where they are.
What does that mean?
Well, not just keeping to your circle.
So I'm curious about go. Where are you going with go there?
Well, Starbucks.
Starbucks.
Yeah.
Oh, gold star on your forehead tonight.
I mean, Starbucks, college campuses.
Go where they are.
Different, clubs or whatever.
Good.
Doesn't have to be just a trip overseas.
Okay, yep.
You can meet them where they are in a different sense, too. Not necessarily just physically where they are, but like at the point in their life or in their spiritual relationship that they are right now.
So what you're saying is we have to figure out where they are. Yes? Figure out where they are. See, I hijacked his answer too, Earl. It's not personal. Okay? What else?
Help them to recognize there is a need.
They have to see the need. Okay?
Be ready all the time.
What, tell me what that means. Where are you going with that?
Well, you can't be, if somebody's right there, you have to kind of be aware of your surroundings. There may be an opportunity. Prepare.
Who said prepare? Where are you going with that?
You have to anticipate those opportunities, and in order to be ready for them, you actually have to prepare. You can't just wing it, because the moment passes like that.
Okay, now, let me narrow your focus a little bit more. Let's think in terms of what we are doing for them and move me beyond the initial part of that. Let's go deeper into this work. What's that?
Answer their questions.
I don't have to answer questions. That would kind of connect with study with them. That was on there somewhere.
Share your story.
Maybe share your story. Maybe.
Share God's story.
So the gospel has got to be in here, right? Somewhere there has to be this teaching piece if they're going to come to Christ. Okay, good.
This might go along with the building relationship, but you have to ask questions.
Maybe ask. I'll put it up there with that. Yes.
You have to prepare for them to be converted. Like, you can't just dip them in the water and then, well, I'll see you around. You have to be ready to integrate them into your group and be committed to, if they're going to really give this a go and they have a lot of needs, you have to be ready to help them with those needs. And okay. with them through those needs.
So I'm hijacking your answer too.
Yeah.
See, it's not personal, Earl. So think about what Jeremy's talking about, this idea of grounded after someone is converted, after they start following Jesus, they're a brand new baby Christian. How much needs to be done in that area? You think of some things?
Continue study.
More study.
More basic study.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have to get the foundation sturdy. What else?
You're starting from scratch. You know,
maybe.
They may be completely out of their society and their culture, and you now have to be their family and all that.
There's a lot of support that's going to be needed. I think especially with the baby in Christ, you know, Satan's not going to be happy.
Ooh, yeah, see, I think the devil is after people, right after their conversion. Yes, ma'am.
Be an example.
Yeah, example.
Yeah, they have many times here at Pilot, they have big convert classes.
Get them in those classes. So let me pause because we do only have until 10 after. I fight that clock every time on Wednesday.
Pray for them.
Well, yeah. I got to move on, though. There's a lot involved in this. Are y'all getting that sense? I mean, we could probably take 40 minutes and just keep building the list and keep running down different angles. One of the things when I start thinking about that I see is the way that these things we've listed begin to fall into categories. I've already done that a little bit. And I don't want to formally structure this as more as help us get the sense that people coming to Jesus is this journey, and there are a lot of pieces to the journey. And so think about this with me. When I think about people's journey, I think about the fact that there is a beginning part to that journey, right? That somehow, some way, they need to make contact with someone who's got the message, right? Are you with me? Somehow or another, that connection needs to be made for people. And so my mind goes to John 4. Who connects in John 4? Anybody know? Jesus and this disreputable woman at the well, right? And so there's a meeting, an awkward meeting, and then a conversation. And then by the time it's all over, she's made the journey. She embraces Jesus and believes in him, right? But it began with that initial point of contact. And so I think the same thing is true for us as we're trying to connect with lost people, that there has to be this point of contact out there where someone who's got the message hooks up with somebody that needs to find it. I think that happens in a lot of different ways too, doesn't it? Invitations were on this board. You know, a lot of people begin their journey to Jesus with an invitation. Someone said, come. We have this thing at church. Come. We'd like you to be a guest. And lots of people start with an invitation like that. Or it's a question at work over lunch. I've been thinking about. And it starts there with a conversation that morphs into a study or something like that. But there's got to be that. There's everything that's related to that initial point of contact. But that's not the end, right? That's just where we're getting started and trying to move toward that opportunity to do this second thing. And I think that's study. Somewhere along the line, there has to be the presentation of the gospel. So I think about Acts 16, right? And the jailer who comes in and says, what do I have to do? What happened next?
They're getting studied.
Yeah. You know, Paul and Silas take him that very hour. They go back to his house and they have a Bible study. Talking about like in the wee hours of the morning, right? In Acts 16. And so I think the same thing is true of us, that somewhere along the way, these conversations, these contacts have to turn into Bible studies with people. So I do a lot of Bible studies in my living room. Had a guy there, what, a week ago Monday?
Friday.
Me and Carla, and was it Friday? See, I don't even know what day it is. And me and Carla and Heidi just showed the big picture right there in the living room. a lot of Bible studies there. Some people learn the gospel by coming and listening to a sermon. That doesn't happen very often, but I've encountered some people who just sat and listened long enough and collected enough information. They say, you know, I think I know what I need to do. But somewhere along the way, there has to be the teaching. And then this last piece I mentioned, after somebody has studied and made the decision, there's all this grounding work that needs to be done. And that's from the Lord. In Matthew 28, verse 19, he said, go make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And then what's the next verse say? Verse 20, anyone know? Teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you. I think often that's a neglected part of this work. We forget that that's another piece of the process, is once they've embraced the truth, then to help them grow and to know what it means to be a follower of Jesus. So we mentioned there's more Bible study that has to happen. I think that's right. Some of y'all mentioned this was on there, the family connections and the support that has to take place. I saw a study a few years ago, so I'm not sure its results are still relevant, but it was interesting. It said people who become Christians and join a church family and make 3 new friends or fewer almost always fall away, like 90% of the time. And if they make between 3 and 7 new friends, there's a 50-50 chance. And someone who makes 3 new connections in their church family, like 90% of the time, they remain faithful. So what does that tell you? Family really, really is important. And we get that because we remember what it's like to be a new Christian and all the questions and all the struggles. And I believe what came up a minute ago, that the devil just assaults people. I've started telling people that after they get baptized. I don't do it that day, but like the next time we study, I say, no, the devil's after you. So you can just expect stuff to happen, because it does, and they need to be ready for that. So lots and lots of stuff in this journey that we participate in helping people find their way to Jesus. So here's the thing I'd like you to do. Look at the list on the board or the slide up there and think about this question. Where do you do your best work? So if you're to be in this process helping somebody, where do you do your best work? What are you particularly good at? So let that question just kind of hang in the room for the rest of the night. I'm going to put 3 statements up on the slide, and then we're just going to kind of kick them around talking about them, okay? And that'll be our class tonight. The first statement I'm going to put up is this. We all have different talents. Love 1 Peter 4:10, as each one has received a special gift. Employ it in serving one another as good stewards of the manifold of grace of God. I believe that. Like, everybody has the capacity to work in the kingdom. And with regard to this kind of work, I think everybody has gifts in their life that have an evangelistic application that makes us qualified, go back to the journey, to help people along the way in their journey. So how does that point apply to what we're working on in this class? The fact that we all have different gifts, what do you need to take away then? Yes.
And it's not like, maybe some people are really good at leading people, but not really that great at having the study themselves, so that they can bring them to other brothers, an elder, or preacher, or whatever, and they can study together.
So you're saying we're not all good at the same things, which means we ought to do what? Do the thing that you're good at. Can I say that with emphasis tonight? Figure out on that spectrum from beginning to end where you are really good, and we need you to pour your energy into that. Take what you're good at and do a lot of it. So I think you're correct. I think there are some people who are wonderful at making contacts, just connecting with people. We had an elder back in Chicago, the guy could talk to a wall. I mean, like, have a lengthy conversation just talking to a wall. Man, it's a gift. You know what I'm talking about, too. Well, both of them. Yes. It's bad having Carlin here. She knows the origin of all my stories. Anyway, so I am not that guy. It'll come to a surprise. Most of y'all know that most preachers are introverts. You have a party at your house, I will not be the life of it. I will be in a corner hiding from all of you, okay? I am not that guy. But there are people who are really good at that, and we need them out there doing that, right? I had two hands. Who was up over here? Yes?
I think one of the things we need to avoid is the trap of saying, oh, they're good at that, they're good at that, instead of saying, what am I good at, what can I do with that?
Yes. Yeah, so let me say it again. Our level of talent is different, right? In whatever realm we're talking about. Some people are better cooks than other people, yes? But someone still has to cook at your house. If you're both C-minus cooks, it just means you're not gonna eat very well, but somebody's gotta cook, right? And so we all have a work to do in evangelism. We're called to participate with the Lord in reaching lost people. And so maybe I'm a C-minus contactor, but that's the best I can do in that work, so I need to be a C-minus contactor, right? Doesn't matter about the level of my talent. It matters that I use my talent, whatever it is and however high it reaches, to the best of my ability. So that's right. We can't cop out and say, I'm not as good as somebody else, or let other people do that. That's our problem. Everybody says, let someone else do that work, and then no one does it. Yeah.
That was kind of to my point as well. You know, we all have to participate. There's a role for all of us. The last place I was where I felt like we were a unit is everybody was involved in the work. Some people were just the people that were, you know, making copies of the Bible studies. Some people were just scheduling. You know, not everybody was out doing the Bible study. Not everybody was out meeting people. I mean, we had flyers and stuff. Some people were just, you know, posting those up in different places. I've heard of really creative ideas of, you know, how they put things up to get people's attention and get phone calls and, you know, make those contacts without ever having to interface with another human being.
So here's what I'm going to say about that. Find what is your thing and do your thing really, really well. I know some people who are great teachers, but they're not great contact people. There's some people who are, and I know some of you people are this way because you've made me and Heidi feel this way since we moved here. You've been very embracing and welcoming and making us feel like part of the family. We need lots of people doing that when we have new folks coming in. So the takeaway to we all have different talents is when it comes to this work, what are you good at? And do that. Do that very, very well. Last word. Oh, partnership in this is so important. We ought to have a whole class on partnering in this.
I can coordinate, but I can't coordinate if nobody else is doing, like, if nobody else is going to study, if nobody else is going to contact, that's great. I can feed people, but if nobody's there.
Yeah, whatever your role is, if you're the study person, you need to be connected with a contact person who can, yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Okay, now I'm about to blow this whole thing up, but I warned you, right? Okay? Because I said, find the thing that you do where your talent is and do it very well. The second thing I want to say to you is we need to be ready to do every part of this work. How can both those things be true?
I'm not a good contact person, but I may be the only person who's in contact with that person.
I see. I mean, me and you are together on that, right?
Right.
You know, I have a hard time meeting people. I'm kind of awkward and uncomfortable about that. I wasn't accusing John. I'm talking about me. I'm pointing at him, but I'm talking about me.
You're right.
But there are people in my circle that, frankly, Chad doesn't have contact with them. And it's not like I could bring him in as a hired gun and say, brought Chad to work today so that he can connect all of you. That's not going to work, right? So it's a great, great example of this.
I think you said it really well a few minutes ago. You said we're called to be partakers, finding and saving lost people. Well, and then what we just said, whatever you do, do it well. But Paul says, whatever you do, whether you shall eat or whether you shall drink, do it all to the glory of God. 1 Corinthians 10:31.
Well, that's the objective of all of this. We're trying to do all of this to bring God's glory at the end of the day by bringing people to him. That is exactly right.
But also, I wanted to say, when you said participating, I like the way you put that, because we ourselves are not, we're not initiating. We're actually just going along with God's plan.
Following the trailblazer, Jesus.
Because just like Jesus said three times in John chapter 6, he said, this is the work of the Father, that you should believe in the one that he sent, that's 6:29. And then he says it again in 6:44, you can't be drawn unless the Father draws you unto me.
It's his work. We're called to do his work. That's exactly right.
And what is his work? John 17, Father, I have fulfilled my mission. I've done my work. I have glorified you.
That's it. That's our purpose in this. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. So, several years ago, my brother-in-law, Tim's dad was critically ill. He was dying. He had cancer. Had not obeyed the gospel. Tim very, very much wanted him to be reached. And so he said, would you go to Odessa with me and talk to my dad? Of course. So we road tripped out to Odessa, went into his dad's apartment. I sat down and, man, I tried to talk to this guy, and it was wall, no, nothing. I mean, I could not get him to say anything to me. And so I walked outside eventually, and Tim stayed and talked to his dad, and he came out and he said, yeah, man, he's not comfortable talking to you. Well, no wonder the guy didn't know me at all. I'd never met him before that moment. And so I looked at Tim and I said, you're gonna have to do it. He was a little freaked out, We back to the hotel, we talked a little bit. And he went back to study with his dad. And the next day we baptized him. And a couple months later he died. That's what I'm talking about. I couldn't do it. Tim had to do it. Why? Because that's who this man would talk to. Does that make sense? So that's why I say we all need to be equipped to do all facets of the work. Every church I've been involved in has had some kind of a program for following up with new converts, okay? So we came to this planet down the road where we had like 8 lessons, and everyone who was baptized was gonna go through these 8 lessons, get grounded, and we were gonna have them study with 8 different families in the church. It was a beautifully designed program. Utter failure. I mean, just a disaster. Did not work. And you know why? The problem was with the new converts. They didn't want to do it. I don't know Rick. I don't want to go to his house. I've never met this guy before. He's a name on a list to them. And they were reluctant. Nothing against Rick, right? But you, do you know who they wanted to study with after their baptism? The person who had been studying with them and building this relationship all of this time, right? So takeaways, couple of them. It is important to do what you do well. I mean, if you're a contactor, we need contactors. That's probably the shortest staff division in this department, right? We need a lot of contactors out there. But then we all need to be, because there are going to be people in my circle that nobody else will have a door with except for me. And there'll be people that will not study with anyone else. They'll study with me. I may be a C- teacher, but I need to be prepared to do some C- teaching if that's the level of my ability to reach somewhere for Christ. By the way, you don't got to be an A+ teacher to share the gospel. You just got to love people and share the same thing that brought you to Christ, right? Okay, so do the thing you do well, and then be prepared to do every part of the work. And then the last thing that I want to say tonight, maybe the last thing, we'll see how that clock messes with me, is to get started, start with a modest goal. So when I coached Little League, I always hated it when one of the boys would hit a home run. Not that that was bad, that was good. But Travis, when you follow a guy that hits a home run, Travis played baseball, what's the next 10-year-old up going to try to do? Yeah. See, he's swinging for the fences too. And what's probably going to happen if he goes up swinging for the fences? Strike out. So I would try to whisper in the boy's ear when they would go up to bat and they had to follow a home run. I'd say, look, just make contact. Start with a more modest goal. Just make contact. Just put the ball in play. And so if I could go back to the arrow that I showed you with all this work to be done, I think a lot of people are intimidated by that. If you start trying to think about the process from beginning to end, and then I just said something about be ready to operate in every aspect of that process, and then you start thinking about the people out there that you're trying to reach and where they are, and some are more and more hostile, I think people get discouraged by that. I can't do all that. It's too much, right? And it's paralyzing. So the last thing that I want to say about this, and it's really angling toward where I want to focus the rest of the class, is I think we need to settle for a more modest goal. So the author of the book that I mentioned last week to you, the book Tactics, Greg Kokel in his book said this, and I thought it was really cool. He said what he tries to do when he goes out and talks to someone is he just tries to put a stone in their shoe. You get it?
Yeah.
What's it mean to put a stone in someone's shoe? Yeah, so I've been running 32 years, and I've run on some gravel. I know about running with a stone in your shoe. And you don't think about anything else, right? Every time the foot comes down and the foot makes contact with that space between your shoe and it and the stone, it's unpleasant, right? So every time your foot hits the ground, you're thinking about the stone. You ought to know about this. I expected an amen from over there. Right? What does that mean? It means that when he goes out and talks to people and begins to try to help people find Christ to begin the journey, he doesn't think of terms of trying to use one conversation to get them all the way to the end, right? Not going to happen very often anyway. He just tries to give them something that they'll think about, or even better, that might kind of nag at them a little bit. Maybe. Maybe stimulate some more study. Go ahead.
And that's why we're planting the
seed. So that's the language I would use. Let me give you an example from his book. He talked about an encounter he had with this woman who was a witch. Now, I don't mean that she was a mean person. I mean, she practiced witchcraft. Yes, yeah. Yeah, he was at a photo processing center. And he noticed a medallion she was wearing that was associated with witchcraft. So think about her journey, how far she's going to have to travel to get from where she is to where she needs to be. And how often do we look at situations like that and say, oh, it's hopeless. It's way too far. I'm not qualified to help someone travel that far, right? But he didn't try to make that whole journey. He just talked to her about her medallion and then about what she believed. Interestingly, in the conversation she shared that the thing about Wiccans was they attach value to all life. At which point he said, so then I guess you're anti-abortion. Which led to a very interesting exchange. It had never occurred to her that her pro-abortion position was in conflict with her approving or supporting all life, which was gently pointed out in their conversation, and that was the end of it. He left a stone in her shoe. I think that one kind of bothered her a little bit, right? You with me? So I read about this story, and I thought, you know, that's a really good starting place for the rest of us. That as we go out and we think about fulfilling our mission, help lost people find Jesus, we should think about doing that, putting a stone in someone's shoe. I like the language of scattering seed. I just like to go out And as I'm talking to people, look for opportunities to sort of direct things toward the Lord, toward something spiritual, to something that has a spiritual connection. And then to see what bears a little fruit along the way. Not trying to convert anybody. I'm just trying to figure out who's open. And so as we struggle with, you know, finding our place in this and having a part in it, I think we ought to start with a modest goal. Which brings us to where I'd like to spend most of the rest of our time as we go through this class. So when I say, hey, just go out and start talking to people and see where it leads, you guys are all real comfortable with that, right? Why are y'all laughing at me?
It's too nebulous.
Too nebulous?
For those of us who are introverts, that is definitely not something we want to do.
Yeah, to say, hey, go talk to people is, okay, wait, that in and of itself was a problem, right? And then what kind of world are we talking to? Spelled correctly tonight. Yeah, more and less and less aligned with our thinking, God's thinking, and more hostile to God's thinking. Yes?
To shift the narrative, it's a world that needs Christ more and more and more.
Yes, it is. So how do we talk to people like that? Yeah.
I was just going to say, those of us who have children were required to have them mimic us. And just because I'm an introvert does not mean all of my children are, and that all of their talents are going to be mimicked off of what I have to do. So back to what you were talking about, how we have to be prepared to do all of it. Those of us who have kids, whether they're young or older, they're still watching us. Now we have to be ready to be able to handle all of those aspects, because each of our kids are going to have a different talent that they need to grow, and they need to figure out where their talents are.
Well, that's, yes, absolutely true. And how important is it for us to raise a generation acclimated to reaching lost people, where they watched an unbroken stream of people sitting in the living room seeing the big picture or having a Bible study with mom and dad? How would that change God's people in the next generation if for our kids that were just normal life? So coming back to the starting point, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, a lot of times the idea of approaching somebody that we don't know is very intimidating, but we talked a lot about, you know, there's a lot about having a strong bond or having a lot of a connection with somebody that can really strengthen or cause them to come to Christ. So maybe instead of starting with, like, just somebody you see with, at the grocery store, start with the circles that you are involved with, whether it's at work or if you have kids, with the parents of teams that they're playing on or clubs that they're in, and people you already have somewhat of a connection with, conversations, seeing where it goes.
And even there, even when it's with people, maybe even family, mm-hmm. when we start thinking about having the conversation, it makes you nervous, doesn't it? It's intimidating. So how do you begin? And how do you grab a moment, maybe with a coworker, and shift that moment to a conversation about something spiritual? How does that even happen without coming off just sort of abrupt and awkward? Oh, by the way, I need to talk to you about your eternal destiny, which might mean he won't have lunch with you anymore after that, right? How do you do that? Is there a natural way that we could wade into conversations with people and gently turn them to the Lord? Is there a way to do that? And how do you begin with people we know are going to be hostile? I mean, one of the reality is, if you have a gay coworker that you want to lead to Christ, by the way, yes, do that. But you know what's going to have to happen in that conversation, right?
But it doesn't have to be what you lead with.
So, which then raises the question, what do we lead with, and how do we move the conversation to there without it raising people's defenses and ending up in an argument? And we see a lot of that going on, right? I think that's one of the things that discourages us. A lot of times when you start getting into conversations with people who are of a different mind and in a different place, it winds up people putting up defenses and not being a very constructive effort, maybe even an ugly effort. And so that's frightening and discouraging too, right? How do you talk to people? How do you do that?
Start with common ground, try to get something common. You have
to come with. Yeah. You'll think people don't care what you know until they,
until they know how much you care.
Unless they know that you care.
Absolutely so true. That's that relationship part, right?
The bond relationship, and you said get to know them, which is what I said, to know your audience.
Yep, that's absolutely true. Yep.
Part of that is getting to know, be vulnerable yourself. If you come off preachy, people tend to shut down. But if you're vulnerable about, you know, you talk about struggles you have as a parent, if you know they're a parent, and usually you can find some common ground and just see what they think.
So I want to work on that in class. I want us to see if we can't figure out how to talk to people in a constructive way and in a way that will direct them toward Jesus, help them begin their journey. So that's what we're going to do through the rest of the class. What I'm hoping is that I can recommend along the way some very practical skills that we can develop and hone that'll actually make this maybe a lot easier than it seems to be at this moment. Because I don't know about you, been there. Talking to people, really, really awkward. Talking to people who are hostile and don't agree with me, even more so. How do we do that well?
Empathy. You gotta have that. Empathy.
Well, we're gonna explore that. I don't disagree with all that, but at the end of the day, if you have a gay coworker and you want to bring them to Christ, you still got to go there, right?
Yeah.
Or if you've got a coworker who's unlawfully divorced from a spouse or who is partying it up on the weekend, you got to go there. You got to tackle those issues, right? Or who's very committed to a false religion. How do you do that? How do we have those conversations? Okay. Sorry. Yes, ma'am.
But I see as we were saying, in a conversation, they do become hostile. As Christian, away from the hostility and change the subject, change it back to a common level, because God's word in us does that. It doesn't promote hostility, it doesn't engage in it.
Yep.
So to transition away from it.
I gotta figure out how to do that.
Some of the fruit of the Spirit change to another subject.
Totally. Yeah. We gotta figure out how to.
Something that was a common ground.
You can always fall back on the comment. I'm just trying to help.
Do you get a sense where we're going? I want to spend a lot of time over the next few weeks talking about how to talk to people. And we'll see if we can figure out how to reach this world we're trying to get to today. Thank you.
Okay.